Yeah, so we're back this week on Arondo. Got some new topics to discuss and new competitions back. One of the craziest competitions out there. You love to see it. But yeah, more importantly, who's back this weekend? Kevin De Bruyne.
Oh, okay, I was about to say, I thought he was going to say something stupid about Chelsea or something.
No, calm down, man. That team's rubbed. That team's rubbed, man. No one cares about them anymore. But yeah, Kevin De Bruyne. So that's the first game I kind of want to look into today. So obviously we had Newcastle versus Manchester City. 3-2 comeback win for Manchester City. Firstly, are they back?
Do you want to go first, bro?
Man City are back.
Man City back. Or did they go anywhere?
I don't think they went anywhere. Obviously, you always knew that, you know, De Bruyne was going to come back at some point. And I think, obviously, Haaland being injured as well. It's obviously two big players for them. I mean,
of course,
people were comparing De Bruyne to Thor the other day. Like, you know what I'm saying? As in, like, he's going to come back and save the day. In Black Panther, where... No, it's not Black Panther. It's Endgame,
bro, when he flies down with the...
Yeah, he's going to come back like that. But I'll be honest with you, like, I've never... Not that I've never, but it just seemed so inevitable, like, what was going to happen when he came on the pitch. And I think that's, like... It's almost, like, confirmed my thoughts for the rest of the season, in all honesty. Like, I feel like, how do you beat someone like that? Unless he gets injured again... It's going to be very difficult for, you know, opposition teams to really rival Man City, I think.
You know what's funny about De Bruyne? He does this all the time. Like, he always missed the first half of the season. Then he comes back on smoke and just bads up the league. That's just him. Like, yeah. He done it 2 seasons ago. The season before that as well. Like, he is actually inevitable. You see when, like, it's going to happen. When he's back, he's scoring goals, he's assisting goals. And then they got Haaland coming back soon as well.
There's nothing you can do to stop them. If anything, De Bruyne coming back just showed me why other clubs will struggle to win the league. Mainly Arsenal. I know Jalen might not want to hear this, but
he knows.
Arsenal, Man, know, City, bro. City have 2 or 3 players that are the top 1% of the 1% of players that play. Like, they can change the game immediately.
100%.
De Bruyne, Silva, Haaland. Mm-hmm. But Liverpool, additionally, Trent, Alisson, Salah. they've got men in their team that can single-handedly win the game for them. Arsenal have a lot of nearly men, the players that could potentially get there but are not yet there, whereas City and Liverpool have finished product, big game players.
But isn't that the point of the Arsenal project? They sign young players who are eventually going to get there. We can't really blame them if they're not there at this point.
I think you can blame them.
When I say blame them, I'm blaming management in terms of who they've signed. They still have signed players. The point is they've been signing young players and they've got young talent that's come through the academy, but you're telling me that they couldn't have bought... We all knew they needed a striker last summer. So why is...
In my opinion, I always said, I think naturally this summer coming up was always going to be the summer for like the striker market. And I think last summer...
This year?
Yeah, I think last summer was more the transfer window for midfielders, the sixes.
They got Jesus just the summer before.
Yeah, I think... And if you actually look at who was on the market, realistically, like Tony wasn't really an option then. You know, Osimhen didn't have the release clause. Like all of these options we're going to discuss obviously later on in the show. Who would you have wanted us to go and buy? I'm confused, isn't it? Like, who was out there? Because we wouldn't have gone and spent 70 more on Hodgson, didn't it? Like, I know obviously he's a good player, but
we wouldn't have done that.
So, yeah, I feel like it's not as straightforward as what you're making out. I think you're brushing as well. Like, Declan Rice turned 25 today. Like, he's going into his prime, isn't it? So, we've signed players going into their prime.
Declan Rice right now,
to me, is like... He's about to touch that level, isn't it? Like now he's touched Arsenal realistically. Give him this season. I think from next season onwards, he should be touching prime levels. Like we're going into 26, 27, 28. Players should naturally mature, innit? So I think, yeah, man, like obviously we don't have the game breakers. I think yesterday, like De Bruyne, the best thing that he done really was he papered over a lot of City's cracks, really, because we can't forget that they were 1-0 up, they were cruise control, and they somehow ended up 2-1 behind. I think there's still frailties in that defence that they didn't have last season. And he came on and just steadied the ship. Like, you guys were... All right, cool. You know, everyone has played football, yeah, cool. We haven't had to play Premier League. But even in school, or if Sunday League, you know, if your best player is not playing, your confidence is down, fam. But when my man comes on the pitch, you're thinking, energy's up. And then he does, like, something brazy in the first, like, couple minutes. You're saying, all right, cool. You know what, yeah. You know, he might actually have a chance to win today. That's, bro, it happens in the highest levels of football.
Yeah.
And De Bruyne is someone that allows his teammates to, I think, express themselves a bit more, but also just... be a bit more calm because it's almost like they know if I don't do nothing, he's going to do something.
He's
you know what I'm saying?
Too clinical.
They can make any run, you know, All their attackers can make any run in the world. That's the method. He's getting the ball to them in the best way for them to finish. It's crazy.
And funnily enough, yeah, so obviously I saw something earlier on Twitter talking about De Bruyne and Salah. Now, obviously, De Bruyne is a lot more injury prone, doesn't play as much of the season. People are arguing that kind of interferes with his consistency. And he's obviously come back, and now people are saying that he's the best player in the Premier League at the moment. Who is the face? Is it Salah or is it De Bruyne?
See, I've got a very biased approach to this, yeah.
That's a difficult question.
The reason I've got an approach to this is because of Reece James, yeah. Hold on.
What?
No, man.
How did Reece James get into this conversation?
You see De Bruyne and John Stones, yeah? They've been declared as some of the top players and the best players in the league. In the last three seasons, Reece James has played more games than both of them. So if we can give De Bruyne all of these plaudits that we're giving him, surely you should be able to give the same for Reece James, which I don't want to. So that being said, I'm going to go with Salah because he's always there and he's always present.
Oh, bro. But you know what it is for me, yeah? I think, yes, De Bruyne has been injured recently, but he's got enough credit in the bank and seasons where
he gets injured every season.
I hear it, but I think he's done enough, in my opinion, to fight with Salah. So if he's going to consistently keep coming back and doing this, to me, it's fine. The other point I wanted to make was, like, I feel like Salah is easier to nullify. And if you're an opposition team, you're looking at the both of them. And I'd ask you, who do you think is more unstoppable out of the two?
I think on the day, Salah's unstoppable, though.
I don't think he is, man. I'll be honest with you. I think if De Bruyne really wants to win a game...
Oh, yeah, he can do what he
wants. De Bruyne will do what he wants, bro. You can't stop it as opposition. I think with Salah, there's more things you can put in place to stop him doing what he wants to do.
And he needs his team more a bit as well, Salah. He needs the team to...
And that's a fear. Like, as I said, I always go back to what Daniel Sturridge said when he was talking about Haaland and Kane. And he said that Haaland strikes fear into the opposition. Kane doesn't. I think you've got to take that into account.
I think that's cap, by the way. What the hell?
Why?
No, I agree, though.
I think physically, if you're a defender and you go to sleep and you're thinking the next day, cool. Who's going to cause me the most problems? Realistically, it's going to be hard.
Because Haaland's going to make it wrong.
But that's my point, though. That's what we're trying to say, isn't it? So I think with De Bruyne, I look at like everything that you'd want from a midfielder, yeah? And it actually goes back to when I was watching Arsenal-Liverpool like last week. And I remember Odegaard done like a little 1-2 and Trent just locked him off. I'm thinking, fam, if you had the ability to just carry the ball, you'd be a fantastic player.
That's one thing.
And then I think about De Bruyne, and you go through like all of the different areas of what you'd want from a midfielder. You think about the range of passes, the long passes, the short passes, the creativity, the ball carrying, and he's still got the engine to get around the pitch. Obviously, not as much now, but during his prime years and when he was a bit younger, you think about all of these things, coupled with the mentality. Do you know what I mean?
De Bruyne has so much confidence in what he does. He knows what he's doing all the time, and he's going to take on that. He's going to make that shot.
But
all
even
the time.
Like the ball striking off both feet, yeah, is insane. Like you got the right foot, but the left foot is basically the same. Do you know what I'm saying?
I watched a clip of him when he was training, when he was getting fit, coming back towards fitness and coming back into the team. And there was a look in his eyes that I don't have to explain it. Only certain men have that look. I've seen it in Ronaldo. I've seen it. There's a look in your eyes of 100% focus, and they're going to come back and they are going to win. There's nothing for you to stop it. Yeah, they're going to win. What they want to do on the pitch, there's no way for you to stop them from doing what they want. They're going to execute their plan, and there's nothing you can do. And De Bruyne is one of the players. I think he's cemented. He was already cemented as one of the best midfielders in the league. But
in conclusion, you think KDB ahead of Salah then?
In terms of the face
of the Premier League, it's De Bruyne.
The face of the Premier League, I think it has to be.
You can't give that for a player who plays 19 games a season.
I'll be honest with you. The reason I think Salah's messed it up for himself here is because he had that little poor period where he just completely dipped out of form. And I think if you're
in a team, how many goals did he score in the league? 19 goals that season,
if you're playing in a team that is struggling and finished fifth, and you also have like a poor period, because at the end of the day, they're looking at you to, you know, drag them out of that. And realistically, he should have been able to take that Liverpool side to a fourth or a third in the table.
19 goals. He didn't.
He went goals for a lot of that season, didn't it? So I think if you look at it from that perspective, I think it's just obviously it's a recency bias thing now that people are going to look at it and say, you know what, De Bruyne hasn't been playing, so there's nothing really you can use against him. And then we've been talking about him for 3 months saying, yeah, when he comes back. And the first game back, he does that.
What could you argue against? It shouldn't be recency bias, though. You should just know that De Bruyne is the best player in the league. I don't think it's a...
What does he have over Salah?
I think, okay, the main thing for me is his decision making. I think De Bruyne makes the right decision like 90% of the time. He's making the right decision.
I don't know though, you know, because last season, remember when De Bruyne was playing, a lot of people were saying he's just
he dropped out of the team whilst
yeah,
he was
like he's been dropped a couple of times.
Alvarez was starting.
But again, do you see what I'm saying though? When you're playing in a team where it doesn't really impact like the overall level, you can get away with it.
I get it. That's why we're gonna say maybe the likes of De Bruyne, because he plays in a team that wins every single trophy.
That's the thing, bro. But that's what he's gonna be in those conversations. That's what goes into it, though. If you're talking about the face of the Premier League, you're talking about the teams that are competing in Europe. And are the best teams like that are known worldwide. Do you get what I'm saying? And he's the best player in that team. So of course he has to be the face. He has to be. Do you know what I mean? But if we're talking about in terms of like all timers now, like where does De Bruyne rank on all-time list, if you're comparing him to the likes of like Gerrard.
Midfielders. I think he's the best.
I'm here for all statements. You feel me? Like, if we're cool. talking, if you want to compare him to Zidane, for that.
Let's be serious, bro.
You know what I'm saying? Come on, man. Like, where does he rank?
I think in the Premier League, that guy's the best I've seen ever. I'm young, so I haven't seen... He was cold in like the 80s. I don't know. But in terms of what I've seen, and I love Scholes, my favourite midfielder ever. De Bruyne is better than him. I love Gerrard. De Bruyne is better than him.
The only thing I'd say is, is you see how we just listed everything that De Bruyne does, I always go to Yaya Toure's prime.
Oh.
And if we were to go through all the areas, like, Toure is better than him in a lot of those areas, bro. That's the reality.
But I think people's prime is different to your overall.
Yeah, so I think obviously on the all-time list, I think we can appreciate that Yaya Toure, like, ability-wise, I think
it's the best.
100% is the best. Yeah, but in terms of what's being done, you know, and the consistency over seasons.
You know, my problem is with the statement, I don't know, you lot might be right, My thing about this whole conversation is that, De Bruyne is so far ahead of everyone else he's around right now that he looks clear.
Yeah, he does.
But back in the day, they had a lot of competition. Gerrard, Scholes, Lampard, Torre, they all were playing around the same time. They all had this competition. So we're looking at them in like similar lights.
Do you know what I hear it? But I think the most competitive time for me was like when all the 10s were going out. To me, that was like everyone playing in that same position. A lot of the teams were playing a similar formation. 4-2-3-1. Yeah, like you had Mata, you had Eriksen, Ozil was there. You know what I'm saying? Like a lot of those 10s were going up against each other. And I think if you put De Bruyne,
separating 10 from midfielders.
Yeah, but if you were to put De Bruyne against like all of those guys, he still washes all of them, in my opinion. Even the likes of Mata, all of them.
Ozil
is a debate, Ozil, at the end of the day, like when it comes down to who's done more towards the end of their career and came here and performed?
It's about the catalogue.
The catalogue.
De Bruyne.
De Bruyne.
Yeah, 100%. De Bruyne. But I think, obviously, if we're comparing like the Ozil at Real Madrid to De Bruyne, I think that's a more interesting argument.
Even if you look at catalogue, you're still going to put De Bruyne over the Ozil at Real Madrid.
But, cool. You would in terms of the career, but I think if we're talking about the actual levels, I personally would still prefer the Ozil at Real Madrid.
I can't lie to you.
Based on what I've seen recently, even when I went to go look back at some highlights the other day of what Ozil was actually doing, especially against Barcelona.
Yeah, but
El Clásico.
I don't like picking individual seasons, because if you pick individual seasons,
no, we're not picking. I'm talking about that whole period where he was at Real Madrid. Bro, the guy used to be able to
2-3 seasons, mate.
Ozil used to have a burst of pace. I don't know what happened.
He was
his
quick.
Dribbling. He used to be able to dribble.
Play him on the right quick. As well.
But if we're talking about in terms of like actual creativity and someone that you'd want in the 10 in that particular era of football,
I think he's the best.
He was the person.
He's the best.
You got.
He's the best.
I think
option.
Obviously now that we've moved away from
this era,
away from the 10s, we move more towards the 8s. Yeah. I think now it's De Bruyne. But I think if we're looking at ability overall, it's an interesting argument. But if we're talking about all timers, if we were to compare De Bruyne to like the likes of Gerrard and blah blah, I've got De Bruyne at the top.
I've got him at the top of
In terms of the midfielders, I think I've got him definitely like at the top of that list.
I think we've never seen anything like it. I think De Bruyne takes the piss. I think he chooses the harder pass sometimes.
But I think
the hard pass so that he's just demonstrating that I can do this.
But the other issue is as well, is that he's playing for a club realistically where it's really hard to get yourself on an all-time list. You're playing at Man City. Do you get it? if he had like a United fan base or he had an Arsenal fan base behind him, even like the likes of Chelsea, Liverpool, whatever it is, I think his stock would be even higher than what it is now, in all honesty.
I agree. But
like, people would be compared. Bro, you talk about De Bruyne, like regularly amongst the likes of like the best Real Madrid midfielders or the Barcelona midfielders.
You would.
If he was not at Man City and he was playing for the bigger club. Because imagine, you've got to think about it as well. If he was winning trebles with Arsenal, if he's doing it for bigger clubs, 100%. If he's doing it for the bigger clubs, 100%.
Do you think
those players
you just listed, do you think they're clear of him?
Yes.
How?
How clear and why do you think they're that clear of him?
Firstly, I'm going to go back to the point we were bringing up before. De Bruyne is not ever present. He's not there all the time. So he's not going to be in this conversation for me at all. Secondly, impact on the biggest games in the world, in the Champions League, stuff like that. De Bruyne hasn't had that.
I used to say this.
At a burnabout, bro. Literally, you scored the goal.
Okay, but okay,
the second cool. game, he was cold in that game. What are you talking about? I know Bernardo Silva was cold, but bro, come on, man.
I used to say the same
who's
thing.
Who's gonna remember these moments in years?
No, but that's what I'm saying. But that's down to the team. In my opinion, that's down to the team that he plays for. When you play for Man City, come on, man, your moments are not going to be the same.
They have no. And I also think that's why he might not necessarily be the face of the league. I think Salah's got the whole Egypt thing behind him. Salah's got no big man thing though.
That's not funny.
This guy loves it.
Why is he laughing,
bro? I don't think you understand.
He's a god.
Wait, you know what? I know. I hear it,
bro. My brother went Egypt here and he said they worship. No,
bro. I know.
His thing in Africa is crazy.
Even when I landed in the Qatar airport, bro,
Salah, bro.
Pepsi advert right there, bro. No Neymar, Salah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So I hear that, but again, I think if he played for a bigger club, a bigger club in terms of just reputation, I feel like a lot more of these moments would hold a lot more weight, and De Bruyne would propel himself up a lot of those lists. Unfortunately, he's at Man City, so. I feel like he's capped to an extent.
But would you say Yaya Toure is capped as well?
I think not for us.
Gets his plaudits,
yeah,
bro.
I don't think he does.
We can't talk about Yaya Toure the same way we talk about De Bruyne, because at the end of the day, he didn't perform for enough seasons. Do you know what I mean?
Yaya Toure didn't get his prime level.
It was
good for at least 4 or 5 seasons at prime level, bro.
I don't think he had that. You see the season where he backed the 20 goals, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, how many seasons like that did he have?
You score 20 goals saying, every single season.
Of course,
man.
Not, but I'm saying that at that level. How long did he maintain that?
3 seasons.
Guaranteed. Okay, 3 seasons. So 3 seasons is enough to put you in what conversation?
That's enough to put you in world class conversation, of course.
So if you were to put Yaya Toure against the likes of Iniesta and blah blah, where's he?
But they're just better than him. Right? That's literally what I'm saying.
He played with them as well, bro. And he played centre back.
I'll be honest. Yeah, but that's number one. That's early in his career. Number two, Pep is racist.
That's got to be a profiling thing.
Pep was never playing that guy in midfield.
He's 6'3" and quick.
But that was fully capped. I'll be honest with you. So that's a myth. I'll be honest. But if we're talking about Yaya Toure amongst the best midfielders. Again, he has to be close.
I think his peak is the best.
That have come though, because if you think about it, Yaya Toure, De Bruyne,
David Silva,
and even Fernandinho to an extent
Bernardo Silva,
in that sixth position. Again, if we're talking about amongst the Premier League greats,
we had
this conversation over there. I think in terms of number six, is Fernandinho 100% would be up there.
Who would you have
as your best sixes? I think you said Makaleli and.
We're not counting.
Kante has to be counted.
Nah,
he has to be counted. Bro. At Leicester, Kante, that guy you just defended.
If we are counting Kante, he's the best.
I don't think you can count Kante as a.
Why not?
As like
though?
A DM though, because he didn't really play DM.
Bro,
he was more like box to box.
Play pivot.
Like Leicester, bro. That guy was literally just everywhere, bro. I don't even know how to describe that position that he was playing in it. So, I don't know, but yeah, man. I think obviously, if we were to come to a conclusion about where De Bruyne fits and who to compare him to, what level of football is he with? If you're saying he's not with the Iniestas and that, who's he with? You're talking about the Fabregases?
The Cruces.
Oh, that's controversial as well.
You already know my opinion on that. He's with the Cruces.
Oh, gosh, Gerald, man. I don't know about that, man.
So, you think De Bruyne is better than Cruz?
Do you know what it is with Cruz, yeah? I just think because he plays with Modric, he's never going to get the credit, really, that he deserves to get. But if you look at the consistency of what he's done over the long period of time...
No,
because, bro, again, I don't know what exactly your opinion is. You'd have to lay that out.
I'm asking, do you think De Bruyne is better than Cruz?
Peak ability, yeah. But whose career would you rather have?
I'm not talking about career.
Whose career would you rather have?
The
longevity of what Cruz has done. It's not just Real Madrid. It's what he done at Bayern as well.
Okay, cool. But you just said because he plays next to Modric, he's not going to be seen in that whatever light.
I don't think he would.
Okay, cool. So if we're mirroring Kroos and we're saying Kroos has a better career or better overall catalogue than De Bruyne, so why can I not say De Bruyne's not in the same category as Modric?
Where?
Because you literally just said that Modric, the light on Modric kind of takes away from Kroos. So if we're comparing De Bruyne to Kroos,
De Bruyne doesn't have a Modric level player playing with him though.
So is it about the players you're playing around?
No, but that's what I'm saying. But sometimes it's like, This is, as I said, this is De Bruyne's team, bro. You know what I'm saying? It's going to be easier for him to stand out in his best moments. I think if you put someone like a Modric in midfield with him, does De Bruyne get the plaudits that he should get?
Absolutely.
I don't think, I personally feel like it would be more difficult for him to stand out.
I actually believe if the two of those two players play together, Modric will just make De Bruyne, but they'll just make each other better, bro.
Who stands out more?
Like, they'll literally just make each other. Who would stand out more?
Yeah.
I think because De Bruyne does more in the attacking third, it will be De Bruyne. Because Modric is normally the facilitator. He's normally doing something before the attacking player does the matting. So Modric will give him the ball, probably slap it into him. 1-2, you get me? De Bruyne will do the matting, and then that's how De Bruyne will get the shine still.
I hear it still.
Fair enough. Anyway, last question on this topic. How does De Bruyne coming back affect the title race? Who's winning the league?
I don't think it's changed anything. Like, I don't know what people. I don't know what people thought.
It's changed in terms of the momentum has swung back.
But everyone knew who was going to win the league from the start.
We're talking about momentum now. Man City did not have momentum a month ago. Let's be real about this now. They went through a run.
That's fine. At the beginning of the season,
similar to how we went to.
We told you who's going to win.
No. But beginning of the season, this is how it was seen. We knew that there was going to be two teams that were probably going to be competing at the top in Arsenal and City.
I said Liverpool from the start. Anyway.
That's fine. But I'm going to bring Liverpool. I'm saying like we did. There was question marks around Liverpool, but I always thought that they would be in and around it. I didn't know that they would be top, fair enough, but I knew they'd be in and around it. I think, obviously, you'd always put City as the favourites. But as we said, going into a fourth season, no one's ever done the four back-to-back.
Of course.
So, you know what I'm saying? There's
opportunity there.
Yeah, there were a couple questions there. I mean, they started the season a little bit lackluster. Like, even now, I still say, like, even with what De Bruyne had done, as I said, against Newcastle, there were still things there that I saw. There's problems there with City. It's just they've got players to cover it. And that's what you need in a team. We don't have that. They do. That's 100%. I put them as the favourites now. I think we're going to struggle without having a player that can cover those cracks. So it is what it is, man. You just got to find it.
So you think Arsenal will still be in the title?
I think we'll still be. We'll still be in the hunt. I don't think it's like a lot of people obviously reacting.
I think you guys crazy
right now, but obviously it's that part of the season where there's like a gap. So you know, we come off a bad run of results. We lost to Liverpool at home. We've got like 2-3 weeks to dilly dally over what's going on. Do you know what I mean? So I think if we had a game the next week and we'd won, all of this would be stupid. Like, do you get what I'm saying? So. It is what it is, man. But I think we'll be around it. Liverpool will be around it. I think Man City will obviously go and win it.
Based on what I've seen so far in the league, obviously my opinion hasn't changed from the start. I always thought City would win, but now I think it will be City and Liverpool, and I think Arsenal will tail off near the end of the season. But it's just because of what I mentioned previously, where City and Liverpool have players that can win games decisively, like by themselves. They can create magic out of nothing. I don't think Arsenal have yet like the definitive players that will win in the game.
So do you think Arsenal need to get these definitive players in?
Yeah, I think that's Arsenal's next challenge. I think the foundation has been built now and they have a good style of play and they have good footballers in a lot of the positions. They just need maybe a couple of world-class. They need either for a couple of those good players to step up in the next year or so, which is what Jalen was saying about Rice, maybe Saka, or they need to go into the transfer market and get that striker or get that or whoever it is that will propel them to the league.
Speaking of the transfer market, obviously this January the transfer window opened. We've seen a couple, I wouldn't say any major signings, but the signing I want to start off with talking about is your boy, Jadon Sancho. You're not your boy no more, yeah? Anyway, he's joined Borussia Dortmund from Manchester United. He's already picked up an assist. He looked good in his first game. What's your thoughts and takes on that?
I feel like people are just blowing this out of proportion. Like, I don't know why man are moving like the Bundesliga isn't a bit like a lower level than the Premier League. I don't understand. Like, of course, a player that is, I don't know, average subpar in England will probably go Sebastian Haller. That's it. That's the end. I don't need to say anything else. Sebastian Haller. Go Google him.
Well, Haaland came from
some players can adapt. Like, and that's the thing as well. I feel like some players are suited to the Premier League and that side of play. Aubameyang came and adapted immediately. Haaland came and adapted, but. I feel like you need that speed. As an attacker, you need speed, and Sancho just doesn't have it. He doesn't have the physical presence.
I don't know, man. Personally, I'm happy for Sancho. As I said, it's a guy that made it out of the ends. Sancho, to me, he's always going to be a street baller. I think any man that is black and is from London should be supporting this guy. I get obviously your opinion. You're a United fan. You're not happy with what happened. Yeah. As I said. Me personally, I don't want to draw conclusions from that situation until, you know, more information comes out because, you know, as I said, we've all been at school at certain times where, you know, the white teacher makes us look a certain type of way to the headmaster and we weren't even doing anything wrong. realistically, you see Sancho and Ten Hag, yeah, that's what that reminds me of. It's a thing where, you know what, he probably hasn't even done that much wrong, but in reality, it's just that white teacher at school is just trying to violate him.
He's calling an attitude problem when it's just him being
himself. That's just him being himself. That's what I'm saying. You know when they take things personally because you were born 30 years ago? Do you know what I mean? That's realistically what it is for me personally. So I think obviously, yeah, they've gone their separate ways.
Even the Dortmund president said that Sancho does not have a behavioural problem.
Yeah, he came out and said it. I saw that as well. Yeah, he came out like 2 days ago and he literally said, we've never had a problem. And my thing is, if he was... a lot of the media that came out around
German
the time,
saying this, brother.
When Sancho was dropped, like there was a lot of information coming out and reports that, you know, at Dortmund he was late, he was this and he was that. Obviously, it's now being clarified, and obviously the question would be like, why would Dortmund come back and buy someone that would do that? Do you get what I mean? So clearly, it can't be true. So this is what I'm saying. I don't want to take everything that's being reported to the media, especially because, as I said, Jadon Sancho is someone that we should be rooting for. I hope that he does well at Dortmund, and I hope he gets a move. I don't think he can come back to United and Percy play under Ten Hag again. Hopefully he outlasts him. We'll see him again.
Do we need to support every young black kid from London?
I think support, obviously, when I say support, I'm happy to judge him on his performances on the pitch, yeah. But when scenarios like this or situations like this happen, we saw it with Pogba, the way that he's not from London, but obviously he's another guy, he's a personality in football that we know the media took and they just twisted everything. Do you know what I'm saying? You look at what Grealish done last season, the way he went drinking after the game, and the complete difference in the reaction.
Because he won the Champions League, brother.
Yeah, but I'm here. But again, it doesn't matter, bro. At the end of the day, if that was someone else,
it kind of does.
No, but if that was someone else, yeah, they were moving like that. Realistically, they're going to be saying, "Oh, why is he dancing in the chain?
They're getting cooked still."
Do you know what I mean?
If they're winning stuff, no, they're not, brother.
I personally think like if it's someone that's similar to us, we should support them through those things, unless there's clear evidence that they are a problem.
I'll say this, innit, on the central point. I've never wanted somebody to blow more in my life. Why? I've never wanted somebody to succeed more in my life, yeah. Literally, somebody from Enns that plays football how the man then would want to play football in a cage, on Astro, in Vicky Park on Sunday League. He plays football like how the man then want to play. He's ripping people. He's using skills. He's assisting and he's scoring. When he came to United, I thought he was going to go to the next level, and you get me, the trajectory would be nuts. Instead, he went on a 3-month holiday, came back.
We don't know what's the reason behind that.
Neither do I. And once again, it's the media. We don't have enough information in it. But from what I've heard or what I've seen, Ten Hag has sent him away to pattern himself, to come back and be better when he comes back. He's gone for 3 months. He's come back and there's been no change in terms of his playing, what he's doing on the pitch. Clearly, that's an issue to me. So Ten Hag has done enough for me to help him succeed, and he hasn't taken his opportunity. That's what it is for me, innit?
I think obviously,
you think Ten Hag in general at United has fostered a good environment for the young players to succeed.
That's difficult. I don't have enough information.
He literally embarrassed their idol in front of the whole dressing room and got rid of him.
To Ronaldo.
Yeah. You don't think them young players looked up to Ronaldo? Bro, look what Sancho was tweeting when my man touched down. He said, "Scary hours, bro." That man, Garnacho. He's still doing the celebration now.
Isn't that a problem? Like, Ronaldo had more of the power in the change room than
I don't think he did have the power, though. That's what I'm saying. I just think, obviously, the way that he treated...
Can I say something to you,
personally? If you're talking about the environment, and we're talking about the way that he's treated players, that, as I said, you're looking at the young players now. Yeah, like, I look at Arsenal's team. If we had experienced guys in the dressing room, they're going to be looking at these guys for... you know, inspiration or help, or, you know, even just to mentor them through the season. You look at the way Ten Hag has treated some of his senior players. Like, I'm even looking at someone like Varane this season, yeah? How are the young players supposed to pattern themselves around that?
And you've seen a lot of the United players have sided with, like, Sancho, even...
That's what I'm saying. Obviously, I wanted to ask you, you know, who you feel like you guys should be targeting in the transfer window and get rid of. But the other day, like, even if you look at the way that players around the world are responding to Sancho, like, do you not feel like they look at United now and they're thinking, bro, you know what? I don't think I want to go there.
They know that United's a graveyard shift, and I can't disagree with that. I've seen it for years. I've seen us ruin multiple players. I've seen us ruin Sancho. I've seen us ruin Pogba. I've seen us ruin Mata. Mata's a big one for me because people don't talk about him in the same breath as the other day.
Bad boy, bro.
Mata win player of the year before he came? I don't know if he won. I think he won player of the year before he came to United.
I hear it.
We misused him for like 7 years.
I don't think that's a United problem. That's a Jose problem.
Of course, but still though, like we misused the player who was player of the year at the club he was at before he came to us.
Yep.
And obviously we did still win stuff whilst Mata was there, but it's like we still didn't utilize that player to the maximum potential. We didn't use him at all. So that's one. Pogba, Sancho, Di Maria. There's so many players that United have signed and have, their careers have, the trajectory's just gone down. I can't think of.
So if you're saying it's a United problem, how are you blaming Sancho for it?
I think it's a bit of both, but just from what I've seen from the media, I'm only going based off of what I've seen and heard from the media. I've been told that he's got an attitude problem, and I was told that he refused to apologize.
You listen to the media, bro.
Alright, cool. You know what? Of course, everything that comes out now, we're supposed to.
What
believe,
the media? Of course, you take everything. So, you take everything with a pinch of salt. Alright,
cool. Say that.
All I know is that when my man's moving, he's amped up, and that you think he's not. You think he's chatting to Ten Hag in the same way. He's definitely doing the same thing, bro. And you think Ten Hag?
Obviously, I don't want to stick on Sancho. You're giving your opinion.
James getting me heated. The Sancho thing gets me.
Alright, cool. Let's stick on this. I feel like we're gonna get something out of here. Yeah, but my thing is like again. Like, is that consistent amongst the way that the other players have moved?
Well, Sancho's from Enns.
In terms of, no, but I'm saying to you, like, if other players have moved in similar ways, are you onto them as well?
Hundo.
So, like, for example, like, the way that Bruno moves on the pitch sometimes.
They call that passion.
How come that's what I'm trying to say. Sometimes it's one day it's passion, but when it comes to Sancho, it's, this guy's got a bad attitude,
Do you know?
Is he not the captain of the team?
When Sancho told Bruno to calm down, there was a time when Sancho told Bruno to calm down on the pitch. I rated it, bro. I was like, this is the energy that you need. Bro, my man said, calm down. Like, bro, you could see the hood in him, bro. I rate that, though, because he's channeling that energy into something that is productive. You not turning up to training or coming to training late, as we were told, I don't know this for sure. You not apologising to the manager when other players that are better than you have apologised to the manager. It's crazy, bro.
Why is he apologising to the manager when the manager was in the wrong?
We don't know that, though.
You can't, in my opinion, you can't have such a strong feeling towards man until you find out.
If you're in his position, you've been hard done by it, and everyone's telling you to apologise to someone who's done something wrong to you.
This is what I'm talking about.
Are you going
to
do it?
And this is the hood mentality we need to get out.
Oh, come on, man.
This is the hood mentality that needs to be alleviated from the man then. Sometimes you swallow your pride. If your superior is telling you, yo, you need to pattern up, apologise. In any other occupation, if you don't, you're getting the sack,
I'm not pandering to the white man. I'm so sorry.
But it's not just that, though.
The gaffer could be black, bro. If my man's not apologising, I think that's a hierarchy issue, bro. You don't respect authority.
That's the Sierra Leonean you talking
about. Let's move on, man. But Raheemi, so two targets for Man United. If you can't get it done in January, who do you feel like?
Two dark targets and one you should sell.
I don't think they'd come. I don't think they'd come, bro. I don't even know if it's worth me saying it.
We need to get through.
But then, when I say this, you're not going to laugh. Elise.
So you had a problem with one of them. Like, you want another? Say
nothing. Who else?
Elise.
I feel like you lot are crying out for midfielder from what I saw today.
I was thinking the same.
Like, bro, I don't know what they needed there. They might need everything.
We need
to be honest with you.
I said before on the pod that I'd sell a lot of them players. Like, I'd say 8 or 9 and even the first people that you see on the pitch.
If you could bring in a midfielder, you be your ideal target.
I want a destroyer. I want somebody to sit next to Mainoo and actually help him. So after what I saw today, Mainoo was in midfield by himself again. Eriksen just doesn't have the legs anymore.
So like a Paulinho.
Paulinho is exactly who I was getting at. Obviously he's been linked to Bayern. I think as a destroyer, he's one of the best in the league, and he would help us massively.
And who do you want to get rid of?
Where do we start?
But didn't you lot bring in Amrabat as that sort of destroyer?
Where is Amrabat? Oh, he's gone now, isn't
he? He's injured.
AFCON.
I thought he was in AFCON.
He's always in AFCON.
Oh, okay, cool.
Who would I sell? Anthony.
What do you think his value
that's
is?
Two right, that's two
his
right.
His value, gone, 21, bro. Maybe 20, 30 million.
That's crazy.
But that's what I say. So
that's what he was, though. That's what he was originally.
And he's on 200k a week.
You see this club, if I could scrap the hierarchy, I would. Mums.
But Drills, what about yourself, Chelsea?
See, I don't even want to get controversial here. Like, there's a couple men I'd sell, but how realistic is it that they're gonna leave? I don't know. So let me pick something. You're not gonna go crazy about it, about Gallagher. I'm not gonna go crazy.
I understand.
You'd sell him. I think he's been your best player this season.
Yeah, but depending on who's coming in, and I think depending on where you sell him to as well, it can make sense.
All right, cool. I'm gonna tell you the reason why I'd sell Gallagher. Yes, Gallagher's been one of our best players this season, you'd like to say, but if you watch him close enough, you see how he impacts the team. Like, the reason that we give Gallagher all these plaudits is because he's always on 100. He's always active. He's always busy. But he's often out of position. He's often in other players' ways, and he kind of affects the team negatively as a whole. Because when we're playing like against bigger teams, per se, he's making these defensive tackles. He's all over the pitch. It looks good. It looks good. But tactically, it's a disaster, honestly.
You say he's similar to like a McTominay, where it's like McTominay was scoring goals, but he's missing, having a negative impact on the rest. Exactly. Okay, fair enough.
You know what I'm saying?
So if you were to bring in two people.
But I'm not finished. I wouldn't say that's a bad thing in whole. The reason I say we need to get rid of him is because Poch sees him as this sort of go-to guy.
I don't understand it.
Which is a problem for the whole team. So make Poch's situation better, we kind of just have to take the player away from him. That's my point on that.
So then would you sell Chilwell as well? Because he keeps playing man left wing.
That's a Poch problem.
I already said, I think from summer, like, based on the options that Chelsea had at left back and who they were looking to get rid of, even in the fullback areas, you look at who you got rid of in the last like few years. I think Chilwell needs to be up there in terms of one of the guys that needs to go, because you can't have two first choice fullbacks that are going to be injury prone throughout the whole season.
What's crazy is Chelsea's system is basically built off those two fullbacks as well. Well, when you guys were good, when you guys were good,
obviously that's changed now. I think it's easier to replace them now than it was before, isn't it? So I think if they're going to cash in, that has to happen soon.
The left back I wanted, he's recently gone to Brighton, but we'll see. About a player I would bring in, I'm not too big about bringing players into Chelsea. We've signed like how many players in the last couple of years? We kind of just need to stick with what we have and like continue that. But if I had to bring someone in, I know Jane is going to find this controversial. Obviously, in Saudi Arabia, Benzema's have been having a lot of problems with he's not turning up to training. He's missed the last three training sessions.
Sorry.
Benzema's in a different conversation. So if we could bring in Benzema as a 6 month loan, I don't believe Jackson is the striker we need at this very moment. In two years, he could be that striker. He has great potential. His all-round game is good, but his finishing is not at the standard that we need it to be right now. So if we can bring Benzema in, Jackson to work under him, learn under him, just for the next 6 months, maybe get us into some European football. He was playing in Saudi Arabia. I don't think playing for Chelsea is that massive of a drop compared to what he is now. So I see it happening.
We'll discuss more on Benzema in like 10 minutes. Have you got another target? One more?
I wouldn't bring anyone else in. We had too many signings.
What about Arsenal? Who would you bring in?
I think for me, the main thing is targets wise. I want to bring in people that are either going to raise the level or just profiles that we don't have. So I know people have said things like Diamande and blah blah, but I just feel like, you know, it's not going to take our first 11 to, you know, the next level. I think it's just cover. So if I was going to target someone, I really want a Stupinan from Brighton as a overlapping fullback and someone that can also invert, but is also good defensively. I just think overall he's a really good left back, and I think if we could bring him in, that could potentially, you know, unlock a new dimension to what we have right now.
You think immediate starts over Zinchenko?
I mean, it just depends, really. Like, in all honesty, I think Zinchenko's place long term, and this might even be the guy that I want to sell. Funnily enough, I don't think Zinchenko's a bad player. I've always said I think longer term, for me, he's gonna have to play in midfield. I don't think he can be a fullback long term. But if he's not going to be a midfielder for us, I think in the back line, in all honesty, I think his role to me is redundant long term. I think he would be the one that I would sell. I'd rather have the two left back options. If Timber's gonna be our starting left back, and then you've also got Tomiyasu that can play there. Both of them realistically are ahead of him in terms of like just they're trusted to play in every single game. Zinchenko, you can't trust him in every single game. So I think it's just a waste of squad space, in all honesty. But as I said, Estupinan, I think that's the first one. I think the second one is more difficult because it's like, would you go for a left centre mid or do you go for the number 9? Now, personally, I think the 9 would make a bigger difference. But I just don't know who the 9 should be. I think if I was to choose one, this might be controversial amongst Arsenal fans. I want to take a gamble on Vlahovic, man. I'll be honest with you. If the price is 40 mil, 45 mil, and I'm saving 50 mil on a Tony, I'm going for Vlahovic, man. I'll be honest with you. I don't know you man's opinions, but that's my personal choice.
When last did you watch Vlahovic?
I watched him against, who did he play? He played when he scored the 95th minute winner.
He's been okay this season. Hasn't been anything.
A couple weeks ago. He's been calm, but he's one of those guys, to me, it's like, I look at the goal that Hojlund scored today. Yeah? To me, Vlahovic has that. And I think sometimes you just need a striker that's going
to
take responsibility.
To Hoyland,
No. But we're talking about the type of finishes. Like, if we're looking at what Arsenal have right now, yeah, that type of goal, we don't have that in our team. Like, we don't have a striker that's going to take responsibility. You see, if Rashford was cutting inside, yeah, and that was Gabriel Jesus, he's stepping over the ball, bro. He's saying, yeah, bro, go score the goal. Hodgson took it amongst himself. He said, no, you know what? I'm a striker. I'm going to take it on. And then he produced that finish. I think Vlahovic also has that same same instinct.
You started your argument by saying you would only want players that would take Arsenal's first 11 to the next level. So you believe Vlahovic does that?
I believe Vlahovic, to me, is like he wants a killer. He's wants a sleeping killer. Volcano.
He wants to kill him.
I think he's a player that could come here and abrupt. Yeah, because as I said, I think if we're looking at the base level of what he is as a striker, I think he's a deadly finisher.
See what the problem is? We just came off the back of a conversation where we were discussing Liverpool and City having players that they know are certified killers.
Yep.
You're bringing in Vlahovic, who's another potential. Which is adding to the potential you have in the squad.
Okay, but then,
that's not a sure
thing. But this is my problem, yeah. And I thought about this all the way here, but Ivan Toney, to me, is still potential. Osimhen, we've seen today, AFCON, we don't know what he's on.
We'll get to AFCON.
Obviously, he scored his goals, but to me, there's still potential as well. There's no guarantee. That's my problem right now with the nine market, innit? It's like, we could go spend 100 mil on Ivan Toney, but to me, it doesn't guarantee a title. So why would we go and rush into that and put ourselves in more problems? Because I think if we buy Ivan Toney now, genuinely, in my opinion, I think in 3 years' time, we're going to have to upgrade again. 2-3 years' time.
Why?
That's just my personal opinion. I don't think his ceiling is high enough, really, for us to rely on him longer term. And I think we're going to keep going around in circles. We've had Giroud. Obviously, Aubameyang was actually a good striker. I just think, obviously, it went left for whatever reason. You look at like Lacazette, now Jesus. Even Nketiah's had chances. Like, all of these strikers that you're trying to, you know, they're not world-class. They're doing a job. Bro, at some point, you're going to have to replace them, innit? And I feel like with Toney, we don't know if he's going to be world-class or not yet. So it's another risk.
So then I've got a suggestion for you then. If you think, because Vlahovic is potential as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think Arsenal should just go for Isaac.
Yeah, that guy.
So
if we were to move on to like some players now and look at their ideal destination.
I honestly think he's literally he's Henry's mold, bro.
Do you think
same body type and you get me, the jink. Like, my man, they're the same. I see, bro, Isaac is going to be something special, bro. I think Isaac at Arsenal linking up with Saka and Martinelli would be carnage, and he can finish. That guy slaps it.
He's finishing.
I've seen the range of finishing that I've seen from Isaac. He reminds me so much of Henry, bro. I don't know how to describe it. Like,
do you guys think that Arsenal is his ideal destination? Like, if he was to go to any club, do you think that's the best?
Even the way he celebrates like Henry, bro.
No, but I'm saying, do you think that's the best fit for him, though?
For him?
Yeah. For him. Under Arteta, I think he'd thrive.
I think he should go to Real Madrid. They need a striker.
Yeah, I mean, that's an option.
You see the Real Madrid team, that's just fucked, though. Having that over your head is fucked.
I think if he was looking at a Premier League team, I think Arsenal.
It's got to be Arsenal, bro.
I agree.
And I've always said with Isaac, I know me and Joe have had conversations about this in the past, and he said, I don't know if he's going to hit 20 goals, and you know.
He's got 10 and Newcastle 16.
He'll get to 20.
For me, the reason I was never worried is because when I look at strikers that are struggling, I always look at like the chances that they miss, but also the goals that they have scored. Even if it's a small amount of goals, you've got to look at the range of finishes, as you said.
Yeah.
And I've never had a problem with Isaac and the type of goals that he can score. It's all different types of goals.
Variety.
Do you know what I mean? So at some point...
he's great on the ball as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, at some excellent. Point, bro, that is going to come
that's
good.
A baller.
A guy that runs the channel.
His link-up player.
A guy that can link play and a guy that can finish. And I think, you know, if I'm Newcastle right now, boy, I'm looking at the current situation. I'm thinking, if he goes, boy, we're going to really struggle to bring in a striker that's going to replace that.
Slightly, they're not going to get Champions League football this season, so he might be looking at an exit. And they need to sell. That's what I've heard.
They're in financial trouble.
They need to sell one of their
trouble.
Big players, either Bruno or Isaac. So
I think Bruno G is another one. It's like Bruno G, if I was looking out of him and Isaac,
if I was him.
I would get rid of Bruno G personally because I feel like he's just easier for them to replace. I think the role that he has in the current team can be done by someone that's not as good as him.
But I also think they love him more. That fan base loves Bruno G more than they love.
It'd be easier for them to replace him, in my opinion, than Isaac. So I think they'd be better off cashing in on him.
They get more money for probably Isaac, though, no?
Bruno G's release clause is 100 mil.
How much do you think Isaac goes for?
His current market.
70 to 80, I think.
Because he's not British.
Because they have to sell, bro. Do you get?
I don't know, but with
Bruno G.
When Man United are buying Haaland for 70 mil, an unproven.
I know. I hate
United though.
But United's going
to
be more.
Man, need to remember, United's team is not the same as everyone else.
Yeah, they have to sell, bro. They've got no assets to sell, so they've got to choose one or the other. And I think with Bruno G, they have the negotiating power. Oh, they've got the resources there, right?
90 mil minimum.
But I think if we go on to Benzema now, obviously, I know you had your opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of clubs in Europe right now that could do with him for 6 months. I know Real Madrid were looking at Icardi and they wanted to bring him in for 6 months, but
why?
Benzema is like the next level up from that. I think mentality wise as well, someone that's been there and done that. Again, someone that the young players can come in and I think they're just going to feel a lot more confident with him on the pitch with them. So I look at United right now. I think Ten Hag was saying that they're looking for a more experienced striker to play with. Hodgeland or rotating and
I
out.
I think he's all howlers. How can you sign someone in summer?
It is, but I don't know. You know, we know United. Listen, we know United are rubbed. We know United are rubbed.
Piss me off.
We know United are rubbed. I think, as I said, personally, I would love to see Arsenal go for him. I know you lot don't think that Benzema realistically would go to Arsenal. I personally feel like that he would. And I don't see.
I can't even imagine him.
I don't see personally why Benzema would go to Chelsea over Arsenal right now. I don't see the logic or the understanding behind that. I get what you guys are saying. You might offer him 400k a week, whatever it is. But I feel like someone of his caliber,
it's a type of club
coming back to Europe. In my opinion, I think he's gonna want to play Champions League. That's the honest truth.
Bro, that's the honest truth. You're not the same.
But the thing is, if you're not in the Champions League, I would 100%. I'll take in what you're saying. But I just think a player coming for 6 months. Within that period, what you're trying to achieve is winning something in the second half of the season. Whether it's a major, you guys obviously in the Carabao Cup, that's not going to persuade him to go to Chelsea. Let's be honest.
What's the reason you think Benzema wants to leave the Saudi league?
I was reading up on this the other day. Apparently, a lot of players are unhappy in Saudi right now because number one, because of the weather. Number two, I think there's a lot of restrictions on the family. Number three, there's a lot of crowds that aren't turning up to the game. So like you'll have like half of the games are like packed out and then the other half are like Sunday league basically. And then... I think obviously it's difficult for the players to kind of adapt to that. So I think a lot of them are probably going to end up coming back. I mean, Saudi, you're going to have to do something about that going forward. But that's the current situation. So I think obviously right now, again, Benzema, what do you do in his situation? Someone that's achieved it all. Where's the ideal place for him to go right now? I think he could go back to Chelsea. I think he could go back to Real Madrid.
I don't think that makes sense.
For 6 months. But they need a striker, bro. They signed Hosselu.
Signed Hosselu like two seasons ago, no?
Benzema could come in now, do 6 months, and then they got Mbappe in the summer.
Yeah, but I don't like the idea of a club going backwards.
That's what they might do.
I don't think Real Madrid... Okay,
I don't want to get onto this.
Bro, it's but, reality, though. We're
behind. What I've heard is that like United are the ones interested in him. They're the only ones who's made... step forward towards him.
I'll tell you why the club is tapped, because all of us knew that Hoyland by himself is not going to be enough. You need the experienced striker to help that young player.
Much of the project stuff without having something in place, really.
It makes no sense. That's why every United fan wanted Kane. Why not add the 30 million on top that we paid for Hoyland for Kane, and then maybe get Hoyland a year after once he's had more development in Atalanta? Surely that makes more sense.
Levy wouldn't have sold him to United for the same price he sold him to Bayern Munich.
We don't know that. This is all happening.
But you lot would have paid the money. So
I think we would have paid. I think regardless of what Levy said to the Glazers, their man would have paid. They would have emptied their pockets and paid.
And that's the difference, because I think City obviously had the opportunity to buy him a few seasons ago, and they were getting quoted like 150 million, wasn't it? And they just said no, forget that.
That's what a smart club does.
When Man City get to their max, we saw it with Maguire. We've seen it with other players. They pull out of deals, bro. Van Dijk, same thing. They were in pole position. They pulled out.
Cucurella as well.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. I always say with Man City, in the transfer window, yes, they spend a lot of money, but we can't brush the fact that they run the club well. They bring in players. Like, you look at Kanji. I always use him as an example. They bought him for 15 mil, and he covers the whole back four. He's starting quality for their team. And I feel like there's nothing that's stopping, even Liverpool that don't have money, going and finding a player that's 15 mil, a defender that can come in and play that role. Even a midfielder, whatever it is. I think that's an important part of recruitment. So we can't always look into, this club spent the most amount of money, you know, net spend and blah, blah, blah. Let's actually think about how clubs are recruiting players and how they're using their funds efficiently, innit? And what can be bought for, you know, the smaller prices.
I could write you in a disso on the mistakes that United have made in terms of what a player is valuated, waiting a couple of months and then paying like double or triple the price of what the player was initially valued.
Yeah. I think obviously in January as well, I was even going to say like this window has been mad quiet, man. Like we're almost halfway through, and it's only really Spurs that have done business really, like out of the bigger clubs. So I'm interested to see what happens in the second half.
I feel like the Spurs business is so funny because you see Spurs and Bayern Munich, it's a funny situation. Centre-back that Spurs have signed, Bayern Munich were in for, but Spurs decided to...
Money.
They twanged him. And then the other way, Eric Dier's going to Bayern Munich, bro. Like, how have they managed?
I'm not happy. I'm personally thinking that I think the agents these days are getting a bit cheeky as well. I saw the guy that signed for Spurs the other day, the centre half, and his agent's coming out saying, oh, I can't believe that we turned down Bayern Munich. And then they're saying, this is the start of the journey. I see him at Real Madrid in 3-4 years' time. I think that's a vile. The guy has not even touched the pitch for Spurs yet. And the guy's saying that this is like, imagine that, bro, if Saliba's agents came out, yeah, and he came back to Arsenal and they're saying, oh, 3 years' time he's going to Real Madrid. I'd say, fuck him, fam.
Inshallah.
Bro, what are you doing in that?
Arsenal fans deserve that, boy. The turbo, you know, will be, these men will be headless, you know.
Agent's getting too cheeky, man. You need to just let the guy settle. Let him, he hasn't even proved himself yet, man. Let him do that before you start talking about Real Madrid and blah, blah, man. But the last two players, sorry, that I wanted to just quickly get you guys' opinions on. Just again, this is ideal scenarios. Osimhen and Tony, where do you think they will end up?
I think Tony stays for another 6 months. I think there'll be another saga. But then,
where do you think he ends up, though, in general?
I think it depends on what he does in this next 6 months. I think if he comes back and he bags consistently in the same way he was bagging last year, Arsenal will go in for him in the summer, I think. I think if not...
He ends up in North London. I don't know where.
Yeah. I think if not... okay. I think if he don't come back and bag...
When I say I don't know where... Either Arsenal or Tottenham, and that's controversial.
Spurs.
Tottenham.
Spurs would be a good move for him, still.
So if his second half to the season is all right, let's say it's all right, he bags what, 7-8 goals, yeah, cool. And Arsenal, maybe they see their attention elsewhere. They're looking at Vlahovic or Osimhen. I feel like Spurs, they need a striker. They need a number 9. He could probably go to Spurs. Whether he'd want to make that choice himself and go there, that's different. But they'd probably be in for him.
Okay. And how about how about Osimhen? Where do you guys think he ends up?
I think he stays as well.
Oh, this window, he probably stays.
He stays.
Spending 100 million or 103 million, I think it is, on a striker in this window is probably unlikely for most clubs. In the summer...
I think he stays again.
Oh, no, I don't think so. I think he stays someone again. Someone different activates that, man.
Osimhen, who needs him and who will go in for him?
I think any club that needs a striker, realistically, he's the best on the market right now. And that's a bad thing, by the way. That he's the best option out there.
When I watch this guy, he's not good.
But that's what I'm trying to say. It's not that he's not good.
Highlights, yeah, he's cold. When I watch his games, I'm like...
His actual football isn't... His football isn't good, but he finishes, and that's all... He's a striker.
His finishing's not that great either.
I think in the box, he's a key. He kills.
In the box, fair enough.
In the box, he kills. Like
10 seconds to round off, guys. Osimhen, are you guys done?
We'll move from Osimhen to AFCON.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, he played today. Again. Obviously, he bagged.
He scored today.
A lot of Arsenal fans said, you know, that he didn't play that well today. He missed a couple of chances. Nigeria obviously started with a 1-1 draw.
Ghana lost, by the way.
No way.
I swear.
2-1 to Cape Verde, yeah.
Oh, wow. My days, yeah. You look.
Cass, I'm coming for you, bro.
No
bro,
eggs. Bro. No eggs for dinner.
I wanted to start off by saying the first... question I went to ask was that I know there was a player at Leicester. I think what squad was he part of? His name's Fatawu. I think he plays for Ghana.
Ghana, yeah.
He said he decided not to go.
And now
how would you guys feel? No, but how would you guys feel about like players turning down the opportunity to go to AFCON like mid-season? Do you feel like they're within their rights?
It's nuanced. Like most international competitions don't happen mid-season. It's only the Asian Cup and the African Cup of Nations. And
what's the reason for that? The weather.
I think it's definitely the weather.
So, I'm not gonna say I understand, but it's like your employer is paying you to play a certain level of football. You probably not gonna win a trophy at AFCON, and you need to basically either improve your career. If you just say you've just come into a team, you're proving yourself in the team. Like now you've gone away for a month. You're out of that team. They find another player to replace you. That can affect your career trajectory and essentially the money you're gonna make in your career. So I understand why a player might want to prioritise their career over going to an African competition in the middle of the season that they might not win. But on the other side of it, it's like playing for your country. This is where you come from. This is where you're born. You do want to represent them. So I feel like there's an argument on both sides.
Okay, man. But you know what it is for me? I think that guy that used to play for Chelsea, I think his name's Fankati Dabo. Yeah. He missed a penalty for, I think, Coventry in a playoff final that could have taken him to the Premier League. He's now at Forest Green in the National League. And he can't. Troy Deeney's come out yesterday and said, you know what? Like, he's been poor. He's not playing again. That's not. Mm-hmm. Now, can you see how the difference has changed over like the period of 6 months? So, let's say someone does now go to the AFCON for a month, and they lose their place, especially lower down. We're talking about like players in the Championship or, you know, players that haven't cemented their place in Premier League teams.
Yeah.
You leave for a month, another player comes in, he does his thing for 4 weeks, you ain't seeing the pitch again.
Again, yeah.
And by the time you get to summer, you could be off, spiraling down the league. So I think there's obviously two ways to look here. I think obviously it's unfortunate that the AFCON does fall within that period of the time period of the season, because I do think it's an important part. You know, you want to establish your place within the side for the important part of the season, obviously going into like the business end.
100%.
But I just think it's like you go back to your country, and everyone knows that you've done that, and it's a techie obstacle, really, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
I go on.
For me, I look at it as it shouldn't even be in their hands. As in AFCON, I think those tournaments, especially the ones in January, we all know that they're coming every, 4 years or 2 years. We all know that they're coming. I feel like the FA, they should be, similarly to the World Cup that we had a couple of years ago, there was a break within the league where all the players were allowed to go and play for their countries at this time. Why are African and Asian countries not respected enough?
That's problematic.
But you know it is, though.
For the summer tournaments, now you have to push back the summer tournaments.
Yeah, because the thing is, it's like, you got to think about it.
It's a small sacrifice to make.
Domestic leagues obviously run on different time periods, isn't it? So like, obviously in America, they might play up to a certain time. Obviously with Saudi, they finish at a certain time. It just depends on the continent. So their international tournaments are like at the end of their season or within the middle of whatever it is. So I don't think we can expect like AFCON to change when they're playing to fit around Europe. Like, that would be kind of backwards, isn't it? So I think it's just something that we've got to accept. But I think the other point that I wanted to make was
It's happened before. I don't know if it was the...
No, they played in the summer, but that's what I was saying. Because that's why I asked you. I was thinking, is it to do with the weather or is that just a particular country where in the summer it was bearable?
It's to do with weather. Generally in Africa, in the summer, it gets quite hot. But to avoid this whole situation, they did try to change it, but they realised it's not very feasible. You know how many water breaks they were having in that tournament? Every 20 minutes, you're having a water break, so that it kind of pauses the game. But what I would say... I can't remember what I was going to say, actually. Continue.
All right, cool. I wanted to basically ask you guys. I saw a video of Drogba the other day. He's called, you know, Mr. Clutch. I know you guys have backed him, especially the Chelsea fans. Scored in multiple cup finals. He missed a penalty. I can't remember who it was against. It was an AFCON final. He missed a penalty. Huh. And they were just talking about the fact that, you know, someone that is so cool under pressure went to AFCON and just completely lost his head.
The rules are different.
There's more pressure playing in the Champions League than there is in the AFCON? In the AFCON,
but we don't have that.
You took it there. I was just going to say it's different playing for your country, bro.
Powers, bro. Anyway, continue, man.
Nah, I don't know, man. I feel like there's a real weight on the shoulders of a lot of African players and pressure, because you are the guys that made it out. Like, you even got to think about the way that they move in terms of what they pour back in.
Yep.
They go back to their countries and they do a lot for them. So I think, obviously, football is like... Obviously, you guys would know more because you're from these countries, innit? But I do feel like a country that is successful in the football scene, it has a big effect on, obviously, people's morale over there, you know, the impact on how people feel during a specific period, because a lot of them don't have as much to look forward to as, obviously, people that live in Europe. That's just the unfortunate truth. So, yeah, I think, obviously, Ivory Coast will obviously... in that period where I think they had a golden gen during that team and they couldn't get it done, innit? So I guess you could say the pressure was too much. I mean, Asamoah Gyan missed, obviously, this was an AFCON, but obviously he missed that penalty against Uruguay and said it's the worst moment of his life. I mean, these things do weigh heavily. And I think if you compare that to the pressure of like a Champions League miss, I just don't think it's the same, in all honesty.
I think we need to take in what it is to play for your country as well. Like, you're the top, I don't even know what that percentile is. To play for your country at the highest level is insane. And obviously, you're bearing that responsibility on your shoulders. People love football everywhere. And I think back to, I think it was the Euros when England were doing extremely well. The country was popping, bro.
Popping still.
The whole country, as in our whole country was on, we were on full tilt, bro. Every pub, every corner, everywhere was, you get me? Everybody was gassed. I remember Box Park was madness. If you think about that, in terms in Africa, where men have scraps, they're poor, bro. Football's the only thing. These men play football with tennis balls. They play football with piece of paper that they can scrunch up. They're banging ball with their goals are fucking bottles, bro. That feeling is crazy to them. Imagine your team doing well in AFCON. That's probably, I don't even know how to explain it. I don't know what that would feel like.
But do you think that's do you think that is like amongst every country though? Like,
it's definitely just AFCON. I definitely think it's every country. You feel a sense of pride. And you want your team to do well in those competitions. Yeah. And it makes, especially if your country is a footballing country, maybe not America, or maybe not these countries that their main sport isn't really football. But I'd say for the South American countries and a lot of West African countries, where football is the main thing, England, especially in Europe as well.
In Colombia, he went back and he was Calas.
Yeah, bro. I think Ski missed a penalty in Colombia. Mafia got to him, bro.
Yeah, bro.
Let me mirror it in a way when you talk about the pressure. You remember, if you watched the Beckham documentary, you see how the whole country turned on him in that moment, yeah? That's 10 times in these countries. Like in Nigeria, in whatever country, in Argentina, when you have these performances, your country will turn on you. And when you perform well, your country will side with you. Like, there's so much pressure.
But look, Saudi Arabia won, didn't they get gifted, like, cars or something? Yeah. The government gifted them something.
Each player got a car.
But do you know what is it? I think, obviously, you guys have, like, obviously made it clear that it's kind of similar amongst all countries, yeah? So you said that, obviously, AFCON is different rules. So I'm interested, like, what are the big differences between the AFCON, whether it's the stigma, the quality of football, what is it that makes it different to everything else?
A big problem in AFCON, firstly, it's team selection and the managers. Actually, no one actually says this enough. We haven't got good managers in Africa. A lot of them, yes, they're imported from Europe.
You can't really attract them either, right?
Yeah, a lot of the managers are imported from Europe, but they're not good European managers. Like, that's the problem when it comes to...
I'm like Chris Hughton.
When it comes to tactics, when it comes to team selection and player selection. For example, we still have guys like...
Did they lose today? They just lost.
We have guys like Andre Ayew who still play for Ghana. Like, in his day, he was a good player. Like, come on, you understand? So this kind of draws us back. Obviously, it's the quality of pitches as well. That's a financial thing. And just the way a lot of African teams play football is just a bit like... messy.
I kind of feel like you guys like feed into the stereotypes a little bit as well, man. Like, you know how everyone will say like, oh, you know, it's AFCON, so, you know, people are surprised there's VAR, bro. That's mad. You get what I'm saying? And I feel like, you know, even things such as like the way the referees move. I know last year, like, did he cut the game early or something? Obviously, the quality of the football. These are things that happen in football, innit? I just think, you see, when you have like a certain label or reputation in football, yeah, it's very hard to shake, innit? So I think like us as a collective, I think we need to work harder to try and stop using that terminology and speaking out against it.
But there's a lot of eyes on AFCON in a certain period of time.
It's very isolated tournament.
And as African Brits, all of us are either going to pick up a couple games and watch a couple games, and we're going to see this stuff. And we tried to get the Europeans and other people to watch this sport with us, or this tournament with us. So we want it to be a good representation of Africa, but sometimes it just isn't, so it becomes comical at times.
I also say why it's difficult for people to get into AFCON, because it's at this period, every 4 years, we're watching Premier League. So we just watched De Bruyne yesterday. How does one expect us to watch? So I saw a clip on Twitter of a guy that he kicked the ball out of play. No pressure on
him. No one around him.
Nobody around him. But I think that's a problem in itself, which is why I think that they should just, like, football domestically in these countries should just stop for a month. Let these men play. Let AFCON, let the Asian Cup, let it play out.
Most professional tournaments are not the same level.
They're not the same. It's because they take players from the Championship, from League. That's what I'm trying to say, though.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, it's a general thing. It's something that happens within football. But it seems like it's put more on AFCON than everything else. And I feel like that's also partly to do with the people that support their own countries within that tournament. And we're also watching it thinking, you know what? Like, this is actually dead. Like, AFCON is this, AFCON is that. I know I just said I'm not African, so I even know I said that, but obviously for you, man.
you're watching the Gold Cup, bro. Like, that's not good for
We're in the Copa America, brother. Don't put that Why? With me. Copa America is completely different.
You shouldn't be.
We're levels above this, so you're South American. We're going against
you. I'm trying to understand.
I don't win nothing.
Why are you in the Copa America?
No, bro, Copa America.
They should be in the Gold Cup. I've already said
it. No, but how are you in the Copa America, though? Like, how has that even happened?
They got invited. I have no idea why.
But quickly, just on the last point, obviously we've got like 2 minutes left. I wanted to ask you, Raheemi, this is separate. Ange versus Ten Hag. Obviously today, great performance from Spurs, considering that they had 5 really key players out. Maddison was out, Kulusevski was out, Son was out, Basuma and Saar all
Now
all
list the United players as well that were out.
I don't know. You tell me. Mason, but they don't. They came Casemiro, and they had 68% of possession.
Luke Shaw, he's integral. Like, literally the same amount. And okay, cool, this cool, is cool. The problem with the narrative. No,
hold on. Go on. But we're talking about. I'm just talking about the front six. The managers. Yeah? We're talking about the front six. So 5 out of their main front six were not there today. You had your main front three. Bruno is also the cam. So that's the front four. We're talking about attacking dynamics, and obviously Mainoo has now become like a favored option in there. Yeah. So realistically, you had your strongest like forward line. Let's be real about it. So why is Ange able to get that type of football out of Spurs with those injuries? But Ten Hag.
Who was the better team?
Tottenham were the better team.
Second half. 100%.
I'll say this. I think Tottenham were the better team today.
don't know about that.
However, I think we United made more for me. I know that sounds crazy because Tottenham had first like 70-80% possession.
But you should have, though. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, obviously, with the absentees that they had, I look at the two teams that were on the pitch and the personnel, and I just think what he's able to get out of his players compared to what Ten Hag is doing, there's a big difference.
There is
between
a big difference
two.
There. I think that's a coaching issue. Obviously, Raf's been waiting. I know Raf will be smiling wherever he is.
So as a United fan, do you not look at the game today and you can see two guys like go against each other very directly? I think in previous weeks when people have made this point, it's a bit more difficult to tell because the teams aren't playing against each other directly. Today, you've seen it.
Yeah.
Does your mind change? Do you feel like Ten Hag needs to do better?
I think Ten Hag definitely needs to do better, especially today, considering the amount of injury. Well, Tottenham had basically no front line. It was Richarlison,
Werner and Johnson.
And Johnson. Like, two of those players you wouldn't even, are not really, they're not,
the midfield, the midfield was Højbjerg, Bentancur, and Skip.
But Højbjerg and Bentancur were actually their two main midfielders.
Both of those players would do well for you, actually.
Yeah, you know, they're very good. And they dominated our midfield. But what I'd say is, in terms of coaching, Ange has definitely got Tottenham playing good football. Regardless of the personnel, they stick to their principles. They don't deviate. They'll play out from the back regardless of who they're playing against, which sometimes seems crazy to me. But he's clearly got them playing in a way, or they've got a style of football that is.
I don't think that's a very team though. I thought that's important.
Nah, I hear that.
Just because if you're just playing your football and you're not winning at certain teams, you're out the door, bro.
It's like Leeds. It reminds me. I said this before. I think Tottenham. It's only going to end one way for me. I know Tottenham are. They're excited right now. They're playing good football, etc. It's gonna get to the point where Tottenham win nothing again, because it always happens. Tottenham always win nothing,
and then he's
playing the same football. But then now he's not winning; he's losing. Those results are gonna stack up, and then eventually he's gonna have to go.
Why are you not being defensive? Why are you not stopping?
20-second answer: the Man United finish fourth.
No, we finish outside. Then. United finish out of the top four.
Top four,
you know, you're seventh right now.
That's a problem though. That's a problem for the league. Yeah, that's a league issue. The fact, I think the other day, I think Chelsea were even above. I couldn't believe my eyes. Chelsea were above us. I couldn't believe
it. 1 point behind you, you know that. 1 point behind.
So yeah, I think that's bad on the league. Newcastle. Think of how many teams have been bad this year. Newcastle have been really bad considering what they were on last year.
Yeah. United really bad, man.
Let's just compare yearly. Chelsea have been shit last year, and they're still not the best now. Oh, we're done.
No, I know you're getting into it, but unfortunately, guys, we run out of time.
We're on minus five.
Yeah. Apologies, man, but we'll be back next week. Don't worry. I'm sure. I don't know when United's next game is, but don't worry, man. Your time will come. We'll make sure Raf is there.
That's it.
Thanks for the rondo this week, guys.
Thank you for coming, guys.
That's right. No, you know, that's why I kept saying 30 seconds to me, because I knew you were just going to go.
I'm going to start rapping.